In 3, 2, 1, this is your host of the Zetitic.newscast, Dave, and I'm here with Xavier Diamant for, I don't know if you'll call this episode 2. It's a little hodgepodge this week because I'm going to be traveling on Thursday, and we're not doing our regular broadcast. We're doing sort of a workshop, but I want to start off where we left off, because right after we did episode 1, Neil deGrasse Tyson appeared on the Joe Rogan broadcast for the third or fourth time in the history of the Joe Rogan Experience. And it's always interesting when he does appear, because you get such a wealth of information on the globalists and the authoritarian astrophysicists, because he really is sort of like the PR guy for the astrophysics community. He's really their Carl Sagan 2.0, right? And he has a real ongoing beef with sort of the modern era's flat earth spokesman. I don't know if he would consider himself a spokesman, but he would consider himself sort of the grandfather of the modern movement, Eric Dubé. And Joe Rogan has a longstanding, you know, contentious back and forth with one of his best friends, Eddie Bravo, on this very subject. So it's, again, it's really interesting when Neil deGrasse comes on. But I've got a series of time codes laid out from the episode. And actually, there's a lot more in the episode that we could cover. But these were some of the choice ones that, to me, really expose Neil deGrasse as just a blatant authoritarianism,
right.
Authoritarian. And he may not even, it's almost like he doesn't realize it, but I think that's what he wants you to think.
Mm-hmm.
He runs in this circle, and he also wears many different masks through the process, trying to put out the image that he's, you know, he's not authoritarian. He keeps saying, you know, we live in a country where we accept free speech. So he pays some lip service to the idea of freedom. But at the end of the day, he really does just want you to believe what he says and to shut up. Don't ask questions.
Yeah.
And what was most interesting, we'll all come back to this by the end of this series of exchanges, but it's like Joe Rogan, he's sort of getting on Neil deGrasse's nerves by the end of it, asking questions, you know. And anyway, so let's jump to the first clip. They were talking about privacy, and I mean, it's apropos for our broadcast, internet censorship and the surveillance state. So let's tune in here.
To attain a little temporary safety, deserve neither liberty nor safety. Those who sacrifice liberty for safety, for security, deserve neither. He who would trade liberty for some temporary security deserves neither liberty. He's got all combinations.
Yeah, man. He wanted to cover that bitch.
All permutations on that one.
This is I mean. I don't want to leave any room for misquoting.
He understood that. So yeah. Your security, you give up some security for privacy, I think.
Yes.
And I don't know if it's a well-known place where that should be drawn. And you can actually get an entire generation born into a state where they think that's normal.
Mm-hmm.
We all now think it's normal. You have to show ID to walk into an office building.
Right.
Oh, my gosh. What would that look like during the Cold War? You have to show in the United States, you have to show your papers just to walk into a building?
Well, they're also changing ID system. Where if you don't want to travel with a passport, you're going to have a new federal ID.
I've already been through
ID.
That. A federal driver's license, yeah. Federally endorsed driver's license. I just went through that last week.
Yeah.
Right? So.
When did that go into play? When is that going to play?
It's for everybody like next year or something. It's very soon. If you want to travel in a particular way. If you don't drive, right. Then it doesn't matter.
You want
to
fly.
Right. We want to fly. Correct. Correct. And I carry my passport wherever I go, so it's not really a problem for me, but. So
why do you carry your passport everywhere you go if you want to just jet out of the country? Fuck this place. You're like a spy.
How's your brain wired?
Mine?
What?
I think you know. But
he also does this other thing with the laugh, right? Because he's an actor.
It's incredibly hammy and over the top. It's just clownish. I mean, he's a sort of hodgepodge of Carl Sagan, and you know, tries to blow everyone's mind with the
talking
cool,
close to the microphone,
right, and speaking in, you know, Barry Manilow baritone fashion,
right, and getting really serious, Joe.
Yeah, it's just it's over the top histrionics. Because I mean, I don't know. He seems to me to be a cult thespian of sorts. He's probably a Freemason, maybe through Prince Hall,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know,
they not have, top they, level.
No, but it's still a lodge, still a Masonic order, and you know, there's, you know, uppity ups and people who travel up and down those lodges and affiliate
you
with
can
all
come
these.
On some talk shows.
Yeah. Anyone who's part of a lodge who's, you know, above 30 degrees, I mean, come on. Tell us about all of the secret rites and rituals.
Right.
But I mean, who knows, maybe Neil's only, you know, 15th degree or something along those lines.
Right.
But it's clearly a sort of Masonic show that he's putting on a little bit.
Right. And on the subject of identification, you know, I went through it. You know, join me. If you don't, you're crazy. I mean, if you don't want to fly, I mean, if you want to travel in a certain way, yeah, you have to do it.
Yeah,
but no big deal.
You have the freedom to travel.
After he just got done saying that if you were to talk to somebody during the Cold War era about showing your papers walking into a building, they'd think you're crazy.
Oh, so in other words, we really lost the Cold War and we're under actual occupation right now. Okay,
right.
Cool.
So again, he probably would say he respects Benjamin Franklin and what he said, but then he twists what he said.
Oh, he totally twists what he says. He says, you give up security, like the more privacy you want, the less security you have. Are you sure about that? Because how do you demonstrate that you're less secure the more private you are? Yeah, there's totally no basis for that. But he, again, it's that Masonic inversion technique that he does. He tries to eschew the line between security and privacy, and implies that you're the more you want privacy, the more insecure you are.
Yeah,
I mean that's so the implicature behind what he's doing there.
But he can't in the long form format. He can't help himself but reveal what he really thinks, and we're building to a point where he's, I've got on my time code here that he tells you what he really thinks about regulation and other fiat forms of government control.
By you want to escape? No, if I had four passports, then you'd say, do I want to leave
Jeffrey
the country?
Epstein?
Yeah, or whoever, anybody in a espionage movie, there's somebody who has five passports.
In a safe somewhere.
And with wads of cash of every currency.
Yes.
So I think, I worry that we're sliding towards a state of total monitoring on the premise that we're all better off for it.
Right.
And it's like the frog in the heated water. We don't feel it day by day, but it's happening. We all agree that we can be hand patted down just to get on an airplane. We've all accepted that because of a handful of people. A handful of people.
Historically handful.
Historically handful. Not even a handful in this moment. Just historically, handful of people. We all say, yeah.
And of course, when he says handful of people, he's talking about the handful of people who flew a plane purportedly into the two towers on 9/11. Never forget.
That's right. Yeah. And everyone just, of course, it's logical. We've all accepted that we have to completely gut all of our freedoms in exchange for
it. It wasn't narrative. Dick Cheney and the other neoconservatives who wrote the project for a new American century and had decided, you know, even before that they were going to, you know, basically put an electric shock collar on everybody.
Oh, yeah. You know, planning everything with Wolfowitz, Rumsfeld, and Silverstein, Netanyahu. On the phone with Silverstein every Sunday for 2.5 years.
He obfuscates by just saying, well, we live in a society that's this way. this is how it is. He doesn't actually say what he feels up front. He just says, well, this is what we've accepted, you know, as society. And it's a way of dodging the question, essentially.
Right. And he's collectivizing his own deference to authority as
definitely
as if it's the only logical purview around this issue.
Right.
And it, the way that, you know, it's the way he couches stuff is so sneaky. It's so duplicitous and in inversion based that
well, when somebody's already decided to compromise themselves by acquiescing to the to whatever the new standard is, he's of course going to justify his own, you know, decision making by just saying, "Well, this is how it is."
Right, and you know,
and that's how issues like this persist and actually, what's the metastasize, you know, they mutate into a cancerous killer.
And it's like he uses this passive language like, oh, well, we're just sliding into this. It's like, no, it's a programmatic step-by-step, like,
he acknowledges that it is like a frog in boiling water and that it is incrementally getting bad. And I did watch 1984.
Right, but it's all superficial lip service.
I did fill out the forms for my federal ID last week. I went through that.
I just did that.
Yes, take my luggage, x-ray my luggage, take away my liquids, pat me down, and I'm okay with that. That's a transition. And I'm okay with security cameras in the street. It was okay in banks. We understood that. But now when I exit the bank and I'm in the street, when I'm walking in the park. So I don't know the future of that. I really don't know. I saw the movie 1984 recently. Mm. Not a very good movie. The book is better than the movie, and I hate to be one of the people who say that. But I was reminded how you can create an entire state where everyone is kept in line because somebody is telling you, we are fighting this battle out on the front lines. I'd forgotten this from the book. They're fighting a war on the front lines. You never see the war. You never hear about the war. You don't know anything about the war other than it exists. And you have to do things a certain way in country so that your country can protect itself from these evil people that want to take over and destroy your way of life.
The terrorists who got on the airplane and flew in, they want to take over, Zach.
You mean like Space Force? I mean, it's such a joke. He's literally describing the very agency that promulgates psychological warfare in the very same fashion that is done in 1984. It's just done not through some, you know, mysterious other that is a battle on the front lines, but look at Space Force. We have to explode asteroids and meteors that are going to be coming towards us. You know, who knows? You know, we have to have nuclear bombs that might have to be dropped from space into hurricanes.
Part of me thinks that a guy like this, actually, he just loves to, like, go to the movies with his kids, and he just fucking loves to believe that if we just put enough resources to it, we could be blasting shit out of the sky. It would be like a fireworks show.
Right. Yeah, trillion dollar fireworks.
And Aerosmith could play... What's that song?
Exactly, Steven Tyler.
And it's a good song, though.
It is. Yes.
Of life. So everybody's under control from Big Brother.
Well, what they didn't anticipate, though, was these social media companies would be the guards or the gatekeepers of your privacy. Because that's what's interesting.
Could you voluntarily give them all your information?
Yeah, it's not governments.
Right.
It's Twitter and Facebook and Google and all the stuff that we use on a daily basis that has access to everything that you do. That's almost inconceivable to someone outside of this generation that there would be a company that would provide a service And through that service, you would give up all notions of privacy.
All privacy.
Yeah, because literally you have a microphone that's listening everywhere you go. You have a bug
right.
that you're carrying around with you. I mean, I don't remember
Yeah, you've been pin-bugged, right?
But
You've been pinned with a lapel.
You will get ads for things you talk about. Mm-hmm. I mean, that has been proven. Mm-hmm. So what is that? What are these passive listening devices that are only picking up keywords? It's no big deal. It's just
the
keywords.
It's the frog in the water. That's what I'm telling you.
Yeah.
So I don't know where it's going to go. Like I said, I'm a little old fogey about that. But I think we'll resolve it.
Do you think there should be regulation?
Generally, if you have something good and it gets abused, you regulate it. That's the whole point of that's we're here alive today because of regulation.
That's the time code I had written down because that was the giveaway. That was what we were building to in this first part of a multi-part series of giveaways to Neil deGrasse as just a blatant authoritarian. We're alive today because of regulation.
So
now, I want to hear your thoughts on that before we play his thoughts, because he elaborates and then runs another circle.
Well, so by regulation, he means that, you know, all of society and humanity would just be in the dregs of ruins, and we would already have destroyed ourselves if it weren't for some central authority issuing edicts and, you know, making sure that things were just right for an order to be maintained. So right. He's an unapologetic, like, hyper-statist at this point.
In a moment, you're going to hear him conflate aerospace engineering with the Transportation Security Agency. Just think about that.
Because there are nefarious people who, in control of powerful forces operating on society, would gain at the expense of everyone else and would not be good for the progress of civilization. So you regulate. Okay? Airlines are regulated so that you don't die, all right? We have the safest record now ever for commercial airlines, American carriers, the safest ever. Look at not only how many people have not died relative to when we grew up. We grew up, there were at least one or two planes crashed each year. You'd lose between 1 and 300 people every year. That was like the baseline number. That number is near zero now. And way more planes are taking off and landing than at any time when we were kids. So it's a double progress point for not only the Transportation Safety Administration, but engineering, technology, and everything we care about. We want to fly. So you regulate. You make sure these are inspected this often. The pilots don't fly more than this many hours. This gets oiled. This gets replaced. It's one of the triumphs of modern engineering, aerodynamics, aerospace engineering as a branch of what we do as civilization is one of the greatest achievements there ever was.
So how do you conflate the proliferation and the refinement of technology, which is in itself going to result in safer outcomes for air travel, with the transportation, it's not even called the Safety Administration, right? Mm-hmm. It's the Transportation Security, which, of course, he equates it to that.
Right.
He wants you to think it's safe because of them.
Right.
And he just jumbles it all up together. It's right. All one thing.
Yeah.
And it's just part of his bullshit.
Yeah.
And that's why he's like, you know, he gets all theatrical. It says, died.
Well, I mean, it's the whole scientism tactic of glomming on to heuristic, like practical, instrumental science and jumbling it together with all these mathematical, purely formal, hypothetical, theoretical configurations and saying, oh, well, it's all science together. And we're all a big one happy family. You know, this proper actual, practical, real science that we interact with on a daily basis couldn't exist without us, the formalists and the nominalists in science. And vice versa, I mean, we probably couldn't prove how right we are without all these, you know, practical science. So it's this pernicious tautology that subsists in the sciences today, where someone can basically be an actor and pretend to have all this knowledge about far-flung incomprehensible distances and equate it to, like, you know, airline manufacturing.
Well, on that note, can I get a fact check on those statistics? Because he just flew by those. I think he just pulled that out of his ass, off the top of his head.
Probably. I mean, it's kind of like, well, he's saying that there's less than 300 people that die every year from airline deaths.
Yeah, I guess statistically, I don't know how that's possible. Because he's like dividing, he's probably...
I think he's talking about the percentages.
Right, the percentages.
Respective of the total number of traveled.
Right, exactly.
But the way that he talks about it.
But as we saw the Boeing Supermax that, you know, got out of the production line with sort of known issues that resulted in what that exposed was the level of automation and absolutely the reliance on systematizing the flight of the airplanes themselves, taking the control of the airplanes out of the hands of the pilots and putting it in the hands of a central computer system, essentially.
Absolutely.
And so he's totally glazing over issues like that, which are actually coming about as a result of the monolithic. Now, do you need flight control towers at your airports to govern flight travel? Yeah, to get traffic, you know, off the ground. But the idea that you need a license from the FAA, who, you know, to buy a consumer drone.
Right,
and it's more blatant authoritarianism and basically claimant over a certain domain, you know, just like they're doing with the Space Force and the weaponization of space. It's like they're just more imperialism, you know, staking their claim.
Right, and it's mostly a psychological campaign at that point.
Definitely. It's not like anybody is even attempting to compete for that spot. You know, like, it's ridiculous.
It's like, we will dominate everything you can see in the sky. You know?
Yeah. So,
well, and it's also like, okay, so airliners, he doesn't have any real operational engineering expertise in airline mechanics. I mean, he doesn't really know anything about, the ins and outs and the meticulous construction.
But you'll hear
of the
Joe
engines.
Say this later. You're a man of science. A man of science. What does that even mean?
In cartoon science. It's, you know, it's easy to be in a man title of cartoon only. Science. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're about to stumble on a great segue. It goes in a great direction because they stumble upon an article about the dark matter and the map of the dark matter. Okay. And this takes the conversation in a perfect direction.
Agreed. Jamie, did you find that stealth stuff?
I found there are cars that have black velvet.
This wouldn't be a car. This would be a laboratory. A laboratory.
Yeah, I didn't find anything.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
Hmm. Look up laboratory stealth light. Something. Try that.
I found those
lamp
like
store.
Cloaks that people wear that sort of seems like video checks.
That seems like fuckery. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of
But in Harry Potter, the what's that cloak that they wear, the invisibility cloak, that would be this principle.
Yeah.
If it existed with that
there's a bunch of videos of that, but it seems like they're just using After Effects, like Adobe or something like that to have fuck with the video rather than create an actual product. Because there was a woman in an office that had a blanket, and she held up the blanket, and you could only see the whole office. you wouldn't see the blanket at all. You'd see what's behind her.
Behind her.
As she lowered the blanket, you could see her, and then from the blanket down.
So why isn't that just a green screen of the background image?
Yeah, I think that's what it was. Right. I think she was holding up a green blanket, if I had a guess.
This might be it? Stealth, okay. Dark matter?
No. Sorry. No. There's nothing to do with that.
Okay.
That's the map of dark matter in the universe. A three-dimensional map.
I've tried to give that a shot.
No, we don't know what it is, so don't worry about it if you don't understand
it. Yeah, but it's too goddamn confusing for me.
It's not confusing at all. It's something out there that has 85% of the gravity of the universe, and we don't know what the hell it is.
That's not confusing?
It's not confusing. It's
if you don't know what the hell it is, it's confusing by nature.
It has 85% of the gravity in the whole universe. Another bullshit statistic that he and they pulled out of their ass.
Oh, yeah. But he's a man. Everyone respect his authority.
To Joe's credit, he says if you don't know what it is,
it's by nature.
It's confusing. By nature confusing, and that's Joe's. He's just going on instinct there.
Right.
He's not, you know. A lot of time he's timid around Neil deGrasse because he's a man of science, and I'm just a meathead from Boston.
Right.
You know, he tries to be humble about it. And it's like, Joe, you should go with your gut a little more frequently because you're smelling the bullshit.
Yeah.
And that's what's really compelling about this series of exchanges is it seems to be unraveling for Neil. The spell seems to be wearing thin a little bit.
Yeah, because there's been zero progress. What was it, Don Petit? We destroyed that technology. I'd go back to the moon in a second. We don't have that.
Oops.
Wait, so you're saying that
we destroyed that technology
45 years after the supposed occurrence, you have retrograde capabilities? Like pre-1960?
You heard John Carmack on the last time's episode. Suborbital or bust. We just couldn't do it.
Right.
With more computing power. I mean, John Carmack, not to go off on that tangent, but he's processing his Doom video game with graphical processing units that far exceeded any of the processing capability of that entire room in Houston that supposedly sent, you know, the Apollo missions to the moon. And he couldn't do it. He couldn't even get suborbital.
Right.
Anyways, this gets into the rest of this clip because now we're on dark matter and how it's 85% of the gravity.
How little sense does that actually make? Like,
so you hear that. It doesn't make sense to you, but because it's coming out of someone like Neil deGrasse Tyson's mouth, you're just
And he has all these books that are like, you know, letters from an astrophysicist.
He talks
like,
about this.
Yeah, like
he condescending.
Romanticizes his ability to like condescend to the little minds of the world, you know. It's like it's clearly like a Masonic act.
Okay, I have more nuanced definition of confusing.
Oh.
Confusing is I'm confused. I don't know how to think. Dark matter is I don't even know what to think. I need something in my head to be confused, right? Dark matter we don't know what the hell
it is. Do you anticipate a solution to that or some sort of a...
Sure.
Is it in Hawaii?
So we don't know what it is, but... He looked at Joe like he was a moron for saying it was confusing.
Because according to him, confusing only means he doesn't know how to think. But when there's nothing to think about, you can't be confused. But you anticipate a solution to something that can't be thought about. How does that work?
It's more bullshit.
Yeah, that's just pure, like, bluff. Like, there's no substance behind it. Just wisp of the will, you know, whiff of bullshit, like, exuding from every syllable. It's, I, because, I mean, think about what the implications for that statement is 85% of the gravitation in the universe. So you're saying that what is supposed to be evidence of gravity by falling objects, there's actually an 85% X factor that you don't know why it's behaving that way.
Also, like, totally, what kind of scientific discovery is this? When was the last time we had a scientific discovery that was so worth reporting in global news around the world that it didn't mean anything to anybody? This map is no offense to Parker, but it's like one of his artistic renditions. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, but practically speaking, what does it actually show us about the nature of the universe, really?
Well, it's not the nature of the universe, it's the nature of the imagination. And that's the thing, is that there's been such a substitutionary relationship between what is imagined to be real and what is actually real. That this grand askew epistemologically has happened, again, incrementally, like a boiling frog, but across knowledge systems. So we've had this eclipse of our ability to think properly about something the more it's becoming something that we're thinking about.
Right.
Because we're working with fraudulent concepts that are just purely imagined, essentially. They're specters or phantasmagoria that we project onto the phenomena. But it's not 100%.
Might have been, yeah.
Telescope?
Might have been, yeah.
Listen, folks.
It's not the GDT. That would be the goddamn test. It's the TMT, 30-meter telescope. So, yeah, solutions to... you don't know. Part of what it is to explore is not knowing what it is that you will find.
Right.
And all these telescopes, the launched ones as well as the ground-based ones, we have enough foresight. We're mature enough as a field to know that... Even though it's designed to look for certain things that were part of the program that you set up for it, you want to have a serendipity mode for it. You want to be able to say, let's point it in some random direction and see what shows up. Without that, you could miss something in plain sight if you're only looking for one thing that you think is there, extrapolated from what you knew before. And the way I think of it is, you know, there's the old saying, as the area of our knowledge grows, so too does the perimeter of our ignorance.
Mm.
So, as
doesn't that just say
holy
it all?
Holy moly. That is in your face. Level 5000. The more the area of our knowledge grows, the perimeter of our ignorance expands.
As that area grows, there are more places to look over the fence and stare into the abyss of ignorance that awaits you. So dark matter is sitting on the other side of the fence.
The way I've heard it described is that the bonfire of our knowledge grows brighter, the area of our ignorance is illuminated.
Okay, I had to think about that.
Yeah,
that's larger, similar to what I said.
More and more things are illuminated.
If the bonfire is your knowledge, that's lighting the way.
As it grows bigger, you see more shit. You don't
see
know.
More stuff you've never noticed before. That's so I guess it's the same principle.
That's a giant one, though, man. 85%.
It's 85% of the gravity. So yeah, and you add that to the dark energy.
Yeah,
you know what that is either.
Of the gravity. 85%.
85.
We did the numbers. We did the math.
This is 100% axiomatically self-verified. In other words, plug and play. Abstract numbers, pull out abstract. Like everything. It's not even say finest, but in its most proliferate form.
The utility of this so-called discovery compared to the utility of the innovations in aerospace engineering, which he has no practical knowledge of, pale in comparison. I mean, the experiments done by CERN, what have they accomplished relative to the level of investment that has been required? Maybe to the geeks.
Right.
They get to like stroke themselves thinking right. about maybe opening a portal to another dimension. That might be the only value is...
Well, just the entire edifice itself is an abomination, so it might as well be a portal of negative energy. It's just like...
It is a subterranean tunnel. I'm sure it's hellish under there for sure.
Seriously, it's like billions of dollars wasted on a giant subterranean witch cauldron.
And how about that that ceremony that they did?
Oh, dude, that is...
That was opening another dimension.
Sure. All, you know... mystery, drama, occult fest. It's all supposed to be...
For those of you who haven't seen that, look up CERN Ceremony Switzerland or something like that. It's like one of the spookiest things you'll see.
Symbolism off dark. Very dark under him. Sacrifice.
Right.
Dark matter, dark energy comprise 95% of everything that's driving the universe. So everything we know and love, the chemistry, the physics, the biology, life, planets, stars, is 5% of the universe.
Now,
theologians and folks say, well, maybe God is in the other 95%.
Maybe.
Okay, but yeah.
Maybe God's dark matter. Wouldn't that be crazy?
Well, people say that.
Surprise!
Yeah. But I don't know why dark matter would care about...
Gay people?
Whether, yeah.
Whether or not chicks drive cars.
yeah, depending on which religion you're in, right? Yeah, all the religions got their thing.
What are you wearing? Don't you know I'm God?
What is the...
Come on. I'm dark matter. Yeah.
By the way, just to... In Letters from an Astrophysics Physicist, which isn't out yet, but again, I don't know how the hell you got the book, but it's there's an entire chapter where I am conversing with people who are strongly religious. There's a conversation I have in there with an Orthodox Jewish person, a Muslim.
Okay, I just want to point out before we continue, he's setting this up to differentiate himself from those people who are strongly religious. When he's actually describing himself.
Atheist cosmology.
Say that again. I think that I had the mic off.
I'm sorry. I mean, he himself is a self-proclaimed high priest of atheist cosmology.
Right.
So, you can be a high priest to something that doesn't necessarily have a godhead attached to it in terms of the belief structure.
Might as well be dark, you know, dark matter
is in the new, yeah, it's like, you know, Ahriman 2.0 or something like this lifeless, you know, emotionless, nothingness that, is
all the planets,
everything.
All the beaches, all the experiences you've had.
5%.
Wait. That's bad math. That's only 90%. That means there's still 10% missing, you fucking idiot.
Yeah. So 5% of what?
No, he said 85% of the. What an idiotic! Yeah, so 85% is gravity, and then there's 5% of all the planets and the physical realm. Like,
so are they basically saying the space time continuum is?
Well, this is where we're going, because then we get into gravity. You know, and
it's
he doesn't want to get into gravity.
Of
and
course
he
doesn't.
You'll find that by the end.
Made up occult egregore.
Multiple fundamentalist Christians, and we're talking about the age of the earth and why, and why do we think one way or another? And so there's a lot of intimate stuff in there that I generally don't go public with, but I did it one-on-one with those who had written to me about these challenges they were facing in life, and they wanted to know what an astrophysicist had to say about it.
What's the youngest version of how old a religious person thinks the earth is? What's the
6,000 years?
That's Christians.
Yeah, Christian. Well, of all,
and not all Christians, by the way.
No, of all religions, I don't know the age.
Scientology is like a month old.
I don't know enough about how old all the religions think the universe is.
Right.
The youngest universe you're going to get from a devout Christian is 6,000 years. The oldest is around 10,000.
And
but it's far and away from billions.
Mormons are a unique one because they think you get your own planet when you die.
Yeah, and what's
are
funny?
Are you torn on that?
What's I want my own planet. Nobody told me that. It's odd how one religious group would comment on how preposterous another religious group's comments are.
I love that.
You know, I was.
Because he's not guilty of the same thing.
Right. Yeah, his explanation is.
He's rational. They're not.
Right.
Just once, I don't know if you know this, I was once quoted after I think the Scientology documentary came out on HBO and everybody was talking about
going
it.
Clear.
At least I think that was it. Yeah, and there was Lawrence a lot of chat clear. About it for a couple of weeks. And one of the news outlets, I forgot who, called me up and said, do I think Scientology should be a religion? Classified as a religion. As an authentic religion. And you can ask, well, why are they calling me? Why? Well, because in Scientology, they're aliens. And they're space beings that
come.
You're
not supposed to give up this information.
Oh sorry. no. So that's how I got brought into this conversation. Because of the sectors of Scientology that involve space beings. Mm. Okay? All right. So my answer was, we live in a country that protects the free expression of faith-based systems, provided they don't subtract from the rights of others. So I will not sit here and judge whether thetans from space exhume souls from volcanoes. At least a third of what I just said is accurate.
Yes. It's
from Scientology.
Yes.
Or whether a man born of a woman is the son of God who died and rose from the dead. I'm not going to compare those and judge whether one of them is more authentic than another when they're both founded on belief systems. And so in this country, belief systems are protected. And we've all bought into that. And so you know what the headline was? Tyson defends Scientology.
Of course. That's how you get clicks.
Well, that's as he just did defend Scientology. He said that, oh, well, it's a belief system, so it might as well be just as good as any other. That is a defense of a fraud. And he tries to equate it with Christology. Wow. So, I mean, maybe he is a closet Scientologist. At the end of the day, I mean, that's pretty good PR for Scientology. Is, oh, well, this decorated astrophysicist has respect for our understanding of space beings. Just legitimate stuff. You know?
But what he would never admit is that he's waging a defense of his own belief system.
Of course. Too. Oh my gosh, he has probably more beliefs than your average religious. Probably way more. I mean, especially everything related to dark matter in the 95.5 versus 85.5.
All the aliens on all those planets, which is only 5% of the conceivable universe.
Yeah, the black hole. The dark matter. It's just, you know, those are all beliefs. You just said that you can't think about it, that you can't be confused by something you can't think about, but you imagine a solution where you're just going to figure out what it is based on.
But it's not confusing.
To think about it.
But like, it's not confusing. Because he has a more nuanced definition of confusing.
Yeah, it's a purely aesthetic definition. It's just that it's pre existing. It's all really an elaborate sophistry that it amounts to basically just a pseudoscientific ontology that can wrap around itself eat itself. And we're seeing it eat itself. Like,
oh, by the end of this conversation, you will see himself destruct, in my opinion.
I mean, he just basically said, well, hell. Hey, you know, both this belief system. I don't believe anything again, except for dark matter.
He comes back with this very third-person type of approach of, we live in a society that protects belief systems as long as they don't subtract from others.
Wait, but what does astrophysics do? It tells us that we are accidental nothing burgers.
We're less than 5%.
That is subtractive to the nth degree. Saying that all of human experience is basically inconsequential and has zero fundamental purpose in a massive, or expanding, billion-year...
intelligent design. This is
so hypocritical.
Like, oh, that's the biggest thing. The biggest thing to take away from this series of clips is how much of a hypocrite he is of his own ideology.
Even his own standards that he's trying to put up as a frame of reference negates his own
points.
That was the clickbait of my comment.
If you want to get clicks, you got to distort a little bit.
There are some rational people who, in the comment thread, said that's not what he said.
Of course.
Yeah.
But isn't it more interesting when they do that and then inside the actual article itself, they give your full quote so people can see the deception? The real confusing thing is when they take a chunk of your quote and kick it out of context, which they love to do.
So you know what I do?
You should go to jail for that, by the way.
Well, so that's interesting. So for me, I'm an observer of that, not a complainer about it. So, is that how they're doing it? Okay, so maybe I can shape this phrase differently to minimize the chance of that happening in the future.
Minimize the chance of you being lied about.
Correct. Yeah. So, for me, that is a landscape.
This is a part where Joe starts to get a little tired, I think, of his self-important gesticulations and just talking about how he's so smooth in front of the microphone, you know, and it's just, it's so tiresome and old hat. At this point, and Joe, you know, we're 2 hours into like a 2 hour 45 minute podcast, and I think Joe is feeling, I don't have any answers yet on the dark matter and the gravity, and this is like the representative of the mainstream astrophysics community. I've got Eddie Bravo over here, a bug in my ear. He's really fucking annoying, you know, with his viewpoint. I don't want to go there. Joe still wants that comfort that comes with the smooth voice of a Carl Sagan, but he's not getting the answers. And this is where he starts asking about gravity. And why people who are like new to the quote flat earth conversation, they say, well, if it's true. This is like when the psychology starts to break. They say, if it's true, why would they lie about it? And it's like, can it just be simple as they're authoritarian psychopaths?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, that's all you really need to know. Right. And it's totally weird that gravity and authoritarianism would be intertwined. I find it very strange that I'm even talking about it. But that's really what you see coming out in this conversation. And I'm really interested to see how this, you know, few months from now, after the internet really digests what transpired on this podcast, where Joe's head is at on this subject, because he does seem to tire a little bit. Anyways, here we go.
There's some landmines here. There are some trapdoors here. There is something. And so for me, one who communicates on that landscape, that's just information for me to navigate it slightly more nimbly in the future.
Right. Yeah. Got it. Interesting. Gravity is one thing that I
wanted
to talk to
you. You're still hooked up on gravity.
Yes. Okay. I'm always hooked up on gravity.
Mm-hmm.
As
you should be.
Well, since we've talked last, I've been reading a lot about it. And one of the things that confuses me the most is that we don't really understand what gravity is. We know its effects. We can measure them. We know how to measure them. We know.
Not true, but.
No. Isn't that like a post ad hoc fallacy where you interpret data that you're already, you've already drawn a conclusion.
He must be
about,
talking about right? the time that Neil deGrasse was on, like, what was it, Conan O'Brien, and he dropped the microphone and said, "That's gravity, bitch."
Right.
And that was his
empirical
scientific proof. That must be what Joe's talking about.
Something along those lines. I mean, he also went on that other email podcast. We don't know what it is. Next question. And I think that's, he was like, we could describe it. We can show what it does. But when it comes to questions about what is, well, so how can you understand the effect of something that you cannot identify?
You don't even know. You can't even call that confusing.
That's guessing about around an imaginary construct. It's not scientific at all. Like, that's literally doodling around and trying to just conjure something.
But what's incredible, I don't want to spoil it, but he basically uses the moon landing as his proof of gravity.
What, that mass is involved? Well, we don't really know what gravity is.
There's a similar question in the book, but they got a little more philosophical than you just did. But they both lean philosophical. It's, science can describe how gravity works, but can they describe why it works?
Can we?
So this is the how-why duality here. And allow me to just answer it from a how-why point of view, and then we can apply it to gravity after I say that. In science, if we can describe how something works and predict its future behavior, we claim to understand it and we move on. You can ask deeper questions about it. Why is there gravity? What is the meaning? What is the purpose? And go ahead, but I'm good with what I've done, and I can land a spacecraft on Mars inside of a crater in a hole-in-one using my understanding of gravity, so I'm pretty good with it.
Wow. So, you know, let's
Getting into belief systems.
Yeah, let's go back to belief systems here, so... in other words, you have no replicability on any heuristic pragmatic level. So you just have to trust.
You have to believe NASA and your public educator that the images that are represented here are from a robot that blasted off, escaped so-called gravity, went into the vacuum of space, and then was attracted to another body's gravity.
Like a million miles away? 2 million
floating
miles away? Or...
in zero gravity, yeah. In betwixt.
And not ever getting, you know, destroyed by all the supposed three.
Also, our understanding of gravity, which is virtually nothing, it got us there, so that proves itself. That it exists. I'm good with that. That's what he said. I'm good with that. It's a very defensive way.
Well, but that's naive realism. That's like saying, oh, well, I went to the ATM and I got money out. That's where money's... I mean, it's basically the same line of thinking where, oh, well, stuff drops to the floor. Believe that we sent a rocket to the floor.
Right.
It's that just like it's totally disconnected from any kind of power.
Right.
It's just pure superficial, you know, power suggestion.
Okay. So I'm not distracted by the more philosophical side of that. Why does it work? Okay. Einstein, so Newton was deeply puzzled by how you can have something called, in which he coined the phrase, action at a distance. Okay. He wrote down the equation that worked.
He wrote down the equation that worked. It worked.
Based on all the axiomatic assumptions that this book had written. So he made up something. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy of the form of mathematics. Basic. Cool. Did that prove anything whatsoever?
And what tangible contribution was it to society?
Well, it started the globe system.
He wants an equation. The moon goes around the Earth. Earth goes around the sun. The moons of Jupiter go around Jupiter. He accurately described that with his equations of gravity. Okay. He said, one day I think we're going to find some way that they're connecting to each other, but I don't know what that is right now, but I know my equations work. He called it spooky. It was spooky to him. That's his word. Spooky action at a distance. All right. Fast forward 300 years. 300? No.
Fast forward 300 years.
Yeah. No contribution or experiment to reality was done between Newton and what? This shill Einstein? Is he serious? And he's a man of science. And he literally just says, fast forward 300 years.
Fast forward 230 years. Get to Albert Einstein. Gravity is the curvature of space and time. And you're moving on the curvature of that fabric. That's gravity. Oh my gosh, is it even a force then? Is it even? So there's no need to think of it as an action at a distance. And in a phrase first uttered by, I think it was John Archibald Wheeler, a student of Einstein. And I learned relativity from John Archibald Wheeler. In fact, that's where I met my wife, in relativity class in graduate school. It's space. So matter tells space how to curve. Space tells matter how to move.
There you have it. Got it all figured out, and I met my wife there. So don't you dare dispute what I'm saying.
Right. Because my entire identity built in metaphysical quasi-explanation based on pure thought experiment. Just thought experiments override any practical refutation. This is the new vista. Space, time, everything. How is that not like a religious fervor? That we just have to suspend our judgment of practical reality?
Well, this is what he calls the how. This is how it works. And if you don't understand it, you're obviously a dolt. The why is sort of immaterial to him. It's inconsequential. He's got the how, and it got his Mars rover to the crater in a hole-in-one shot. And we've got some pictures now of Mars. So he's good with that.
But from a zetetic standpoint, it's impossible to come to a comprehensive understanding of how without having constant whys being asked along the way.
So this is where he actually gets most irritated. Is Joe is a naturally inquisitive person. It's one of the reasons he has a popular podcast, is because he just keeps asking questions even if they're dumb. And it's not necessarily a bad thing, you know, proceed by inquiry. Absolutely. But to somebody who wants to dictate, and he makes the most incredible claim later on about education. And it, again, it reveals itself in a stunning way. He says, you'll see.
Moves along the curvature of space. You don't need an action at a distance. There is no action. It can't do anything else but do that. It's like you have a funnel and you take a ball and you roll it on the funnel. The ball can only do what that funnel tells it to do. And it'll if you give it a sideways motion, it'll start spinning around. There's no magic hand coming in there. It is following the curvature of its space-time continuum, this construct that you provided for it. So now I can describe what gravity is doing. I even have a mechanism for it. Are you going to still ask me why is there gravity? Is that answer not fulfilling enough to you, even in the why department? You can say, well, why would a particle curve space? You can just keep doing that. That's fine. But is there a point where you'll be satisfied with the answer? Oh, that answers my why. I can say, well, why did this half liter of water drop off the edge here? Well, it's no longer, the forces are imbalanced. And it's, no, but why did it fall? Well, there's nothing holding it up. Why did it? There's a point where it's not especially productive to continue to think about the world that way. Because what I'm claiming is answers to the how, when you understand the how enough, are tantamount to having answered the why question. That's all. That's what I'm telling
tantamount
you.
Tantamount in terms of your ability to measure it and accurately use it.
Correct. So we can say, okay.
But isn't it still
you got a bald
curious?
Head. We can say, well, why did you go bald? Well, okay, the hair fall.
This is where I think NDT is really feeling the pressure.
Uh-huh.
And he diverts to something personal.
Right.
And he tries to explain it away in a comparison that is with Joe's physical appearance, which, you know.
It's more so. It's totally ridiculous statements left and right.
But again, Joe actually sniffs the bullshit, and he calls him out to an extent. Check it out.
Follicles, Adam, when you start in your late 20s, and early, when did you go bald? When did you start losing your hair? Probably late 20s, early 30s.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's common. If you have your hair when you're 30, you'll probably have it for the rest of your life. That's how that goes. You start losing it upright going up till you're 30. So you can say, well, the hair follicle begins to not producing the keratin or whatever. We get the explanation. Then you say, well, why does the hair follicle stop doing that? Then you say, oh, well, because the DNA has it precoded about the hair kind of thing. Well, why does the DNA have the hair? Well, because
right, but we know far more about how and why people go bald than we do about what gravity really is, correct?
No shit. So wow, why are you bringing that up,
pretty,
Neil?
Pretty big elephant in the room, isn't there? Well, Neil's trying to do this false equivalency maneuver.
Right. Where, that's a better way of putting it than...
It's a false equivalency maneuver where he can hide in the absence of his evidence.
Right.
So long as he can problematize anyone asking why in general.
Mm-hmm.
It's just classic deflection.
Right.
It has zero argumentative efficacy behind it. And it's basically just bloviation. It's him, you know, off the cuff, kind of spinning a narrative based on these comfortable tropes that he's worked with for all these years.
Right.
And under further scrutiny, if you just...
He's like, this worked on the university graduate school class I taught. Why isn't it working on Joe Rogan? Yeah, he's a meathead from Boston.
And it's like, it's not just a matter of constantly asking why.
It's not.
It's not just a matter of just asking why.
That's all it takes to frustrate him, then...
That's pathetic. That's not... There's no science whatsoever.
And what's the problem with that? Anyways, what's your beef with why?
Yeah, well, so...
Isn't that your... And this
you
is
want what, me to give things a purpose? There's no meaning anywhere. What are you, stupid? I mean, that's the entire... This is nihilistic,
right.
You know, atheistic, you know, Masonic existentialism. It's not...
It's revealing. This was a very
totally
revealing exchange.
It's totally revealing.
I'm telling you, gravity really is... The curvature of space and time. That gets us the Big Bang and everything we've ever known and loved.
Curvature of space and
that was a huge tell right there.
Right.
He's like, you don't like my answer? That got us the Big Bang and everything we know and love. Did you catch that?
Yeah. Oh, it's just like...
What does he mean by that? We know and love? Who's we in that equation?
Do you mean we, Kimosa?
Wasn't that incredible?
Oh, wow. It's just such a clear desperation. It's like anything to get me out of being scrutinized on the details of my bullshit.
in time, but it's also based on mass, right? It's based on the amount of mass.
Any concentration of matter and energy and or energy will curve the fabric of space and time.
And the more mass,
and
the more
the movement
gravity.
Of matter on that fabric of space and time, we call gravity. And I'm good with that.
Okay. But you seem a little oddly defensive about something that's scientific.
No, I have to say I'm good with the.
But you are, because you're kind of defending it.
No, you can say, well, why does matter.
Why do you need to know why?
No. Why
that's
does,
what you're saying.
No, I'm saying, why does matter and energy curve the fabric of space and time? You can ask that.
Okay, why?
And I don't have an answer for that. I can say.
Well, that's all I'm asking.
Well, no. What I'm telling you is.
Okay, you don't need to
I
know why.
I got you to the point.
Right.
We had to walk to that point.
Yes.
Where your why got unanswered.
I understand that. But
before we got to that point, I answered otherwise.
But I'm not disputing that.
Good, good. So what I'm telling you is that I can answer your why question most of the time, but then you'll come back to a point where there's a point where there's the why doesn't have the answer. So you say, why did it fall? I say there's a force of gravity operating on it. Why did it fall that way? Because of the curvature of space and time. I'm answering your whys.
I understand.
Then, well, why does matter and energy curve space and time? Okay.
So he admits that eventually you get to a point where there's no answer. But I'm answering your whys. But you're not.
But you're not. You're just reciting a script that can be applied to any phenomena and be passed off as an explanation. It's just, it's him reciting a mantra.
Right.
Around questions that he has no idea how to answer.
He just recites that mantra a little more beautifully than anybody else. He prides himself. I know he talks to the mirror probably a lot. You know, he prides himself on his, and it is interesting, the term gravitas. Uh-huh. You know, he practices himself, you know, saying things in a certain way, and that's part of the neuro-linguistic programming of the authoritarian, you know, scientistic crowd, you know, that they adopt. I wouldn't call him necessarily an NPR tone, but, you know, sometimes it's just that soothing, calming, soft, you know, that Barry Manilow, you know,
right.
That he adopts it and he leans into the microphone and he gets theatrical. And I think he plays with people's emotions too, especially like Joe Rogan's, you know.
Well, he has to because he doesn't have any solid data to support his beliefs.
Right.
That he thinks are just facts from nothing. He has no basis to support them as fact. Mere hypothetical illusion. It's the whole dark matter, dark energy fabrication centers around just an allusion to a possibility.
Right.
There's literally nothing else supporting it. It's basically a fantasy conjured from the pages of bored mathematicians, essentially. Playing with axioms, playing with coordinates, plug and play.
And setting up expensive computer hardware to run nothing burger calculations that result. Can be visualized, perhaps, in some rudimentary ways, i.e. the map of the dark matter.
Right.
And it's like, this map aesthetics. Doesn't get us anywhere.
It's just it's just an aesthetic painting.
Contrary to the sailors and navigators of yesteryear who actually were legitimate cartographers and were able to fascinatingly navigate the plane we live on using the stars above. Right. That's antiquity, and it's fucking impressive compared to this low-resolution crap that came out of the map of dark matter. You know, sorry to get off on that tangent again, but it's just so ludicrous.
You know, constellations. Idea about dark matter. Because if this thing is 85% of the universe, why are constellations so perennially predictable? Wouldn't a star just get swallowed up mysteriously or all of a sudden?
Right.
Any given year, any given month? because of this unexplainable force called dark matter that's 85% of everything.
Or how about the immense projected masses of planets and galaxies, which under their theology would have their own gravitational pull, and everything's pulling on each other, and it's either dancing in complete equilibrium for all, you know, measured time, vibrating in the same essential pattern, or everything is like competing with each other, and you've got these black hole like rogue agents like swallowing entire galaxy. It's just like
it's
total
it's
sci-fi fantasy crap.
It's absolutely
that is why I like Eddie Bravo's. Yeah. You know, when he walks people through on a podcast, he talks about how he used to be just so obsessed with space videos, and him and Joe Rogan would watch space videos and all the 3D animations. Yeah. And at a certain point, he's like, everything is CGI in these. It's all just animations. We don't have a single camera out there that can give me some like live feed footage or something like that. It's
of course not.
No. We don't,
destroyed that technology.
We just don't have the funding for it. But anyways, we're approaching a point where we do get to the end of the line in questioning on gravity, and it really begins to get under the skin of NDT.
Well, in NDT, I'm sure he's basically like, well, I've already fulfilled my contract script here.
I promoted my book.
Yeah, I promoted my book, and I don't have any real explanations, duh, but, you know, I can give you my script again.
Right.
It's just a script. There's no science behind
it. He's just mad he doesn't have a microphone to drop to make it real clear for Joe Rogan what gravity is.
Okay, that's a frontier. We're still working on that.
But that's all I'm asking.
That's good. That's fine.
But you are a man of science. So you're a person that should probably embrace whys.
Except many people who ask why questions, they really want to know purpose.
Oh, I'm not asking purpose.
Good. Well, then that distinguishes you from many other people who ask why questions.
Oh, okay. I don't know if there's a purpose
like,
for anything.
Why did you bang the table? I was angry. There's a purpose behind it.
That
okay?
seems...
So,
yeah.
So if your why is just a curiosity of what's going on, that's one thing. If you are inquiring about purpose, then it's theological, okay? Because when you're theological, then religions give purpose to life.
Clearly, I'm not doing that.
Right.
But I just think it's amazing.
How dare you ask a question about purpose? That's not why we do science.
Science isn't about meaning. Nothing's got meaning. You're an idiot for thinking there's purpose.
Did you see poor Joe Rogan look off to the side? Well, I don't know if anything.
I don't
has
think
purpose.
There's anything else. But what a weak response! Just you didn't talk about. I thought you were like a bodybuilder. Mine was like limperous noodle. Come on! Of course, scientists are going to ask questions about why. Think about like insects, right? How do we know the migratory patterns of birds? Why do birds go to certain places at certain times of year? Just basic, real-life knowledge absolutely has to involve purpose in determining
it just
a solid
shows,
comprehension of what
it
the
just shows
is.
How uninvolved NDT is in real science.
Absolutely.
Because he doesn't want to work. He'd rather do a couple media engagements, say his script, make a couple $100K, you know, and then be who the hell knows what he's doing with his time.
Oh, man. And, I mean, just, like, to think about engineering. Like engineering is all about whys. Like, why a certain component goes in a certain place and is connected to another
why
component.
Why chemistry?
A operational capacity.
Why does...
is a purpose-driven question.
Oxygen react to hydrogen. Why, you know, chemistry is all about that as well. Right. All the disciplines.
So, this notion of, like, oh, well, people who ask why questions are trying to seek purpose, and science doesn't give purposes, it only gives explanations and descriptions. It's like, that's some weak-ass science.
Amazing that something that's such a massive part of life on this planet, that we stayed glued to the ground because of gravity.
Can you pull up my Instagram account? I only post.
You have an Instagram account now? Because you had a fake one for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
I
took it over.
A friend of mine, actually. I know the guy.
I took it over.
He gave it to you?
Oh, the guy who had it?
Yeah.
No. I went to Instagram and said, people think this is a real account and it's not. Can I have it back?
I got to set this up a little bit because this is just pure gold. I mean, he really exposes himself in this series of exchanges, but this one in particular, because he's reeling. I mean, Joe's kind of got him on his feet despite himself. On his heels, you know, against the ropes with this whole gravity argument. And then he pivots to his Instagram, which is a colossal mistake.
And if it's an account that's an imposter and followers don't know it, it's illegal.
Right.
So there's one that says fan of Neil Tyson.
Yes.
And that's a different one. Okay.
That's the guy
okay.
I know.
So I only post art house photos, okay, that I've taken, most of which I've taken. So just scroll down. And look for Muscle Beach. There it is. Click on that. Okay, so here's my cap. Go to my caption. Go full screen on that, my caption. Okay. For most of our life on Earth, we either resist or succumb to the force of gravity. At Muscle Beach, gravity loses every time.
That's not true.
I was proud of that caption. You call me out on that caption.
That's nonsense. Gravity never loses. Gravity doesn't even have like little tiny losses. It's not like there's a war and gravity loses a battle.
For those just listening.
So now, I mean, devastating, right? And he employs this laugh, this over-the-top fake laugh to really hide how I think it's uncomfortable. Ooh. I think it's a little uncomfortable. Like Joe's like, that's not true. That's bullshit. Like,
I thought that you were an astrophysicist. Gravity is...
Right.
Is everything that keeps everything intact.
And it was his little tongue. Like, if you go to his Instagram page, and we should probably, on ZNN, we should probably be following it if we aren't already. He just posts pictures of art. You know, he's wearing Starry Night, you know, as a vest, and they spend 10 minutes at the beginning of the episode talking about his vest and his interest in art. Who gives a fuck? Right. Let's get to the nitty gritty about gravity. You know what right. I mean? And he's feeling the pressure. And this is right before where I think his real agitation starts to show itself. But what a mistake pivoting to that.
It's like, okay, he's clearly just trying to be, you know, cutesy and be cool and
tongue in cheek.
Yeah, like, man, these guys are so impressive. All the acrobatics they can do, they're beating gravity with their strength, like, but
they're not.
But at the same time, he's actually exposing a chink in the entire argument of gravity, that it's a selective force. Apparently it can pull down, you know, quadrillions of tons of water to a ball. But right. Butterflies and bees and balloons,
yeah,
and
also, yeah,
everything
exactly.
Is just hunky dory, you know, buzzing around. Well, so where's the universal applicability of this force?
Right.
How is it so selective? Yeah. What about someone who just happens to have enough muscle density?
But a man, even for somebody who believes in gravity, right. It's a nonsensical thing to say.
Sure.
It's like saying jumping is beating gravity. To Joe's point, gravity doesn't even have small losses.
Supposedly. According to his model.
According
that he's supposed
to the model.
To be defending.
Right.
Right, but he's exposing chinks in the entire epistemological foundation, lack thereof, behind this purely hypothetical conflagration. Doesn't have any, has no independent variable. Like, I can't hold a hammer up in the middle of a field when Jupiter is supposedly XYZ many miles closer to Earth and see that pull of a grander, bigger planet that supposedly have a huge gravitational field. There's no, you cannot independently manipulate gravity. It has only a single dependent variable, which is a downward tendency.
Downforce.
Like, that's, you can't manipulate that variable.
But at the same time, it's supposed to be a gradient. And there's an escape velocity, which, by the way,
yeah, right.
For Earth, allegedly, is supposed to be like three times the speed of a rifle bullet.
Uh-huh.
And we're supposedly launching people you're putting a device behind them that goes three times the speed of a rifle bullet, and they're not like just completely obliterated.
And what happened to all those vacuum safety training sessions that they did in the early 60s in NASA? Wasn't the rate of unconsciousness in a vacuum under certain G-force like in a matter of seconds?
Right.
Like, how the hell can you fling anyone at that speed and expect them to operate anything? They're not, wouldn't even be conscious. They'd probably die in a matter of minutes.
Right. But then you think about this so-called like gradient of gravity where it, well, it's not really a gradient. It seems like there's a barrier almost according to the
right.
rocketry videos that I've seen. And I would think, I mean, that number one doesn't make any sense for there to be just a solitary like boundary upon which gravity goes from being on an object to being off. And that's what we call orbit. You know, and it's like you get past some barrier in the atmosphere,
yeah.
and then all of a sudden you're in orbit and you're fixed in orbit arbitrarily. You know, like how do you actually fix yourself in orbit? The way that it's almost depicted, it's like gravity just you find a position and then you're held there by gravity, but not pulled back in unless you're too close, and then you are pulled back in. And so why is it so selective there?
Right.
Why are the other bodies spinning around us, you know, not this? These are all questions that, you know, Neil deGrasse would he would think they're just hypothetical, you know, thought experiments, but they're right. the actual practical questions
right.
of the claim.
Right.
It's not like we're making claims. We're just asking questions.
Right. And it's questions that are deemed inadmissible because there's too much of a sense of purpose behind the question being asked.
You should just accept we sent a right. rover to Mars, and so why bother asking the question when we've already accomplished that?
Yeah, I believe.
It's a waste.
You go to the moon.
All right, here we go. We're about to get to the good part.
Into this. So I was in Venice, California, and the yes. sun was setting behind some guy who was doing hand presses suspended up yes. on the chin-up bar, mm-hmm. right? And it was and it was cool. He was silhouetted. There's a palm tree. There's the beach. Yeah. He's there.
Gravity's gonna.
Hey, I just created a professional Wix site for my business. Let's check it out. Go to Wix.com.
Beat that motherfucker, let me tell you.
Eventually, but while he's there, he's conquering gravity. Are you getting too old? You haven't conquered gravity lately.
No, I work out all the time. I'm not buying it. Sick, I ain't conquering shit.
He's pulling rank now. He said, I work out and you don't because I see your middle-aged man belly.
Well, when I've talked to other astrophysicists and scientists.
Wait, let me ask. Are these conversations supposed to have a theme or a purpose? Or is it just you sit there and just whatever?
Did you catch that? He just asked about purpose. How dare he ask about these? Does this podcast have a theme or purpose? We are 2 hours and 11 minutes into this podcast, and this is the third. I think this is the third time he's been on the Joe Rogan podcast, and it's not but like 4 or 5 hours into his on-air conversations with Joe Rogan that he decides to ask this question. All right, let me play this out.
What comes to your head, you send my way.
You and me?
Yeah.
Well, clearly, it's just whatever comes to my head.
Okay, I don't know. Do you say this episode is about? You can't say that.
I don't ever do that.
You don't do that. Okay, fine. Well, it's just episode number.
Secret to my success is that I don't have a purpose.
You got no commitments.
Well, how the fuck could I ever have a thread? Think about all the different people that I have
in
here.
Of course, of course.
It's like impossible.
Of course.
Between fighters and scientists and scholars and crackpots. There's like a bunch of different people coming through here, man. I can't have any agenda.
All right.
I mean, that's probably the only reason why this thing is successful as it is. But that's a weird one for people, that this one thing that is so powerful.
What is? Oh, gravity.
That's a weird one for people.
Yeah, I mean,
it seems like you're frustrated by all the various questions.
No,
it seems like
no.
You seem a little defensive there. Am I right?
No, because I thought you were taking your why to ultimately mean purpose. If it's just why, I'm claiming that many responses to how are also responses to a why.
Mm-hmm.
That's the point I'm making, and I don't like splitting definitions.
Do you think we'll ultimately understand gravity?
I think we do. That's why we can land things on Mars.
Well,
circuitous to such
begging the question.
So back to the original evidence, we landed on Mars. If it ever comes out officially that's bullshit, then will you admit we don't? It's so frustrating to hear him admit that they don't know what the fuck they're talking about.
So flimsy. But at the end of the day, he's basing everything off of a two-dimensional screen illusion, an aesthetic accomplishment, broadcast or something. But there's no direct forensic ability to repeat it or replicate it, do anything that would indicate for anyone that it's actually something. And
it gets to belief system.
Right, and going back to, you know, the quandary. You know, this whole thing of, oh, if you just ask a bunch of how questions, you understand a why. That's not true. It's ultimately not true.
Right.
You know, you can ask how trees behave, but you're not going to understand why trees mate, for example. Hows are important, but at the same time, they're mostly schematic based investigation. Whereas whys not only is about purpose, it's about explication. It's about unraveling basis for how something happens, as well as significant.
It's a more powerful question.
It's a more powerful question. And just because we don't have any immediate answers, doesn't mean that the questions aren't worthwhile or that they're ultimately unscientific. Of course, they're scientific. It's in the pursuit of knowledge. Then it has a scientific basis. So just trying to ignore questions regarding causality or origination is a way to basically avoid abstract import.
Well, what's amazing here is after he completely lost the exchange on gravity, He pivots to another huge, colossal mistake, and I'm not going to play the entire clip just because it's so mind-numbing. But an even more theoretical, hypothetical, and empirically unproven field of study, black holes.
We understand,
I think we do,
effects.
Which is why your cell phone gets time from GPS satellites that is pre-corrected for Einstein's general theory of relativity, because they're in a different gravitational field than you in orbit than you are on Earth's surface.
Dun, dun, dun.
We got this.
You're getting angry.
Einstein is triumphing.
We're running short on time here, so I sent you something that I wanted to ask you.
What's
it? I sent you an email. Did you get that email?
Oh, I did. Yeah, it was about a black hole that landed in a mysterious place in our understandings.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll give the sort of Reader's Digest version of this. Okay.
Okay.
There are black holes that are.
I'll send it to you, Jamie.
They're black holes that are formed at the consequence of the death of stars. Okay?
Okay.
And we think we understand the formation of stars well enough to say, well, a star is born with this much mass, and it'll lose a certain amount of mass over its life. All stars lose mass because there's so much pressure and so much energy coming out, it carries particles with it. So they lose mass. The sun is losing mass. as we speak. It's called the solar wind. So everybody loses mass out there. The question is, at what rate are you losing mass? Is it a lot compared to your total mass? Is it small? So very high mass stars are not especially stable objects. They remain stars for 100,000, at most a million years, and they'll explode and become a supernova. If you're more massive than that, they will not explode because the gravity is so strong that it cannot explode against the strength of the gravity, and it collapses into a black hole. So we expect black holes to have slightly less mass, somewhat less mass, than the most massive stars that we know how to make. So if you have 100 times the mass of the sun star, it'll lose half of its mass over its life, and you have a black hole that's 30 times the mass of the sun or 50 times the mass of the sun. Fine.
It's like the little Jedi mind trick. These aren't the droids you're looking for. It's the same old tactic of pulling a bunch of big numbers or impressive sounding numbers out of his ass and just waving this mysterious magic space wand. I mean, to believe in black holes, you have to believe in gravity. To believe in gravity, you have to believe in globalism. To believe in all of that, you have to believe in the Big Bang. It's part of everything we know and love. It's one package. It's a package deal. So I think NDT really outs himself as an authoritarianism. I recommend everybody, you know, check this full clip out. There's some other choice parts of it. I actually want to do another segment maybe at some point with an expansion on climate change authoritarianism, because he's got just some incredible statements about climate deniers, which is just a nothing phrase anyways. So climate denier, it's just, yeah, it's retarded. I'm going to say it's retarded. But there's just so much to unpack here, and he's a big name. He's a big name. He's on Joe Rogan. I mean, what did you think about what was exposed in this series of exchanges, and especially Joe Rogan and his sort of tension between them on gravity itself?
Well, it's kind of a weird position that Rogan's in, because early on, you know, he was a big moon landing skeptic, and all of a sudden, you know, he ushered into the halls of prominence under the condition that he tarry nowhere near that subject anymore, and only ridicule tried to ask basic questions that he himself was asking, you know, a decade and a half ago.
Do you think he's really trying to go in this back in the psychological closet as far as like gravity goes?
I mean, I think just to like keep his audience maybe intrigued or something, and give himself an air of like mystery and ambiguity for time. I mean, I personally think that I think the reason why he's maybe pushing the subject a little bit more is in previous interviews, people really ragged on him for just like basically filleting this guy, giving him softball nonsense.
Right. You know, he said accolades at the beginning, "I'm a dumbass."
Right.
"I'm a dumbass." And then he comes out in that first interview, "You know how we got to the moon and back? Well, we know how much fuel was in the Saturn V, and it was to get to the moon and back." And it's just like, wow, what?
Yeah, but then where did that telemetry data go? Oh, like, did it get taped over?
Yeah.
Got lost. Uh-huh. Yeah. Huh. Yeah.
Because we were
the actual forensic proof that would indicate some sort of travel place. No, we don't have that. All right. That got lost. Still don't have the technology here with the space capsule. Incredible slingshot. Riding the rocket bull all the way. First time. Perfect shot. There and back. I mean, do people really believe? I mean, I guess people still do. When you see these personalities trying to paper over and smooth over all the obvious, glaring, fraudulent elements that have been exposed a lot already, if you just dig a little bit. But heaven forbid that anyone questions, you know, the high priest of astrophysics.
Yeah, I want to close this second episode with this last clip. Maybe this will parlay into the next segment we do on perhaps climate change authoritarianism, but mm-hmm. I think he talks, this is the segment where he talks about how education works, and it's, again, pretty revealing. He's always really exposing himself.
If you manage a team, you should be using Monday.com.
In these
instances.
It's
a platform to manage any team and any
So, Neil, you're not a climate scientist, but you're a very distinguished scientist and astrophysicist. What do you think about when people say, look, this is not settled science. There are still questions. I sometimes think to myself, look, there are a lot of questions still about Einstein's theories that led to nuclear fission, but we still know that nuclear power plants do operate and they do provide electricity. And
yeah, so what's happening here is there are people who have cultural, political, religious, economic philosophies that they then invoke when they want to cherry pick one scientific result or another. You can find a scientific paper that says practically anything. And the press, which I count you as part of, the press will sometimes find a single paper, say, oh, here's a new truth. Mm-hmm. If this study holds it, but an emergent scientific truth, for it to become an objective truth, a truth that is true whether or not you believe in it, it requires more than one scientific paper. It requires a whole system of people's research, all leaning in the same direction, all pointing to the same consequences. That's what we have with climate change as induced by human conduct. This is a known correspondence. If you want to find the 3% of the papers or the 1% of the papers that conflicted with this and build policy on that, that is simply irresponsible.
Can you define large? Large body. So it's just whatever he or whoever says is the body?
Well, I mean, that could be special interest committee.
If one scientific paper is axiomatically observably true, what's wrong with pointing to it?
Right.
You know, why does it need to be more than one?
Absolutely.
If it's true.
The truth would speak for itself, regardless of how popular it is. And, you know, lies are often bandied about and,
right.
and oft repeated by large numbers of people.
Right.
So I mean, this is an absolutely ridiculous claim. A scientific truth requires a large body of research all pointing in the same direction. So in other words, there's full directional bias in order for a scientific truth to be legitimate.
Right.
There has to be uniform bias in determining the direction of what the research has to be in
right.
order for there to be any scientific
All the
truth.
Powers that be have wow. to agree. We're going to go this direction. That's essentially revelation of the method, right?
That's what we have with human-induced. Exactly. You have a bunch of special interest committees and pet agencies who want to make a name for themselves, and they all parrot the same bias.
Yeah.
And it's all programmatically displayed for everyone as if it's settled. That's called fine-tuning. That's called manufacturing consensus, Delphi method. You know, expertocracy.
Subversion.
Yeah.
So this concludes episode 2 of the Zetitic.newscast. I want to direct listeners and viewers to our website, Zetitic.news. We've got a few new features I want to highlight, including a subscribe button, which will allow you to easily subscribe to the Zetitic.news cast. That is an audio-only subscription at the moment. But we also have our YouTube channel, at least for the time being, until we get censored online. And what I'm doing is uploading our episodes in 10-minute parts, and then I'm putting together a playlist which will be featured on the sidebar of the website. Or, of course, you can subscribe to the YouTube channel. We've also got a new cryptocurrency ticker on the website. We're going to be tracking some choice cryptocurrencies. We'll probably be looking at expanding that. And you can even exchange currencies right here in the app. And a portion of that that transaction will be donated to the ZTITIC News Network. So you can support us and hopefully help us finance, you know, more original content. Also want to point out we've got now news feeds up and running. We're going to be expanding this and improving it. It includes different themes of news that we have curated from our trusted, to use a Brian Stelter CNN term, reliable sources. But no, seriously, these feeds are what, you know, we are browsing and where we get our information. And it's a proceed by inquiry type of approach. I mean, just because it's on there doesn't mean it's true. You should definitely look into the source. And
we are not dictating reality to you.
We are not dictating reality to you at all. And I think Xavier's got a new article in the works.
Yes.
You want to give us a preview of what you're talking about?
Basically, you know, all of the kibitzing surrounding global financial meltdown, multi-market financial reset, XYZ, pending conflicts, regional or otherwise, and, you know, maybe a few fresh takes on where we might have went wrong in our thinking around economics.
Right.
And how we got to this point where we're just passing the worthless debt-ridden buck down the line so we can more deeply impoverish people later on. That's basically the system we have.
Well, I'm looking forward to that next the next episode. I think we're probably going to talk about that. Economics is one of the subjects that really kind of woke me up. Understanding that and talking about the global reset will be a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
All right. Till next time, y'all take care. And it's been real.
Absolutely.